Are you cyber confident? Do you know what your digital footprint is? Do you understand the reasons you're a cyber target? In this podcast series, you'll learn what it means to be cyber confident both at work and at home. Because when it comes to cyber security, the front line is you. I'm Jessella Waldron, and this episode is all about how ethical hackers are being used to test cybersecurity in defence. Richard Smith is Senior Project Manager on the Vulnerability Research Project, which sits within the MOD's Cyber Resilience Programme, while Peter Lillington is the project's technical lead. First of all, I asked Peter to explain what an ethical hacker is.
It's probably best to go, I guess, back to basics. There's a lot to talk about, so this will be the very short version. Way back when, the only thing there were hackers, and the law was set up really to deter hacking. So ethical hackers is actually a relatively new innovation, and it really came about with, you know, we're good faith people that are wanting to report issues that they're finding on systems. And the law was, and in some cases still is, not set up to allow that. And I think really an epiphany came through industry and in wider commercial and now in government spaces where, you know, we came to the question, would we rather not know, you know, would we rather know than not know what's actually going on? So rather than prosecuting people who are trying to tell us things are wrong with our systems, let's actually work with them, assuming it's all done in good faith, so we can actually, you know, improve, everybody can improve their environment. So the culture has really moved to a greater acceptance of ethical hacking, people who are hacking for various reasons, but generally it's, you know, with good purpose and nothing malicious behind it. The law is still working its way, and the culture to some degree, but the law is still very much working its way towards that. So in the States with the CFAA and in the UK with the Computer Misuse Act, there's still no definition of ethical hacking. So anybody that is actually in good faith reporting something could still get, in theory, could still get prosecuted for doing so. In the States, they've just recently within the last year changed that, but the UK is still, you know, lagging from that perspective. So things are moving. They have a way to go yet, and we are part of, I guess, changing how the attitude is, you know, within government space, to actually, you know, more of an acceptance of that ethical hacking environment. Again, it's like, would we rather not know? Would we rather know than not know? Right. So that's kind of the background, if you like, to what, you know, to what we're doing.
So Richard, tell me a little bit about this project and the MOD's use of ethical hackers.
Yes, absolutely. So it came about at the Ministry of Defence around about 2016. So at the same time, the Department of Defence, which is the US equivalent of the MOD, the DOD, they were actually working with the ethical hacking community and were running a project called Hack the Pentagon. Christine Maxwell, within the Ministry of Defence, got sight of this and was interested in the work the DOD were doing, because this was first of type for defence. As Peter just alluded to, the law had only, you know, recently changed and in some respects hasn't still quite caught up. So in 2019, the MOD piggybacked off the back of the project with the DOD. And after that was successful, it was then actually then set up as an individual project on the Cyber Resilience Programme. So a full team was stood up in 2020. And since then, we've grown as a team and delivered numerous interventions. So the bug bounty in particular, we've actually just completed our sixth bug bounty and are actively planning our seventh. And we're also looking at running an in-person bug bounty because all of the ones we've done to date have been remote on internet-facing assets.
Peter, can you give me some more details on how a bug bounty works? What happens?
I think actually to be able to explain that, it'd be good to start with explaining a VDP, which kind of leads into a bug bounty, because the very first thing we did, and it's been stood up for 2 years, was to set up a VDP, which is a vulnerability disclosure program. And what that is a container to allow to passively allow anybody to report a vulnerability that they find on mod systems. And as long as they do it ethically, as long as they follow the rules and they don't break anything, we're glad to receive the report, and we have a safe harbor statement within the MOD that you are not going to get prosecuted for telling us something which is of value to us within the MOD. So that was set up in 2020, and that's like the passive process. There's no money or nothing else involved within that. The active component that we're talking a little bit more about today is the bug bounty. And so the difference between a passive EDP is that a bug bounty is very much more active. It's where we're focusing on finding vulnerabilities in some defined assets using defined security researchers, and compared with a VDP, this is a paid for engagement. And it's paid in such a way that if you find something, you'll get paid for it based on a sliding scale of how important it was, whether it was kind of a low up to a critical. You can get paid different amounts relative to that. So the bug bounty is something we started first of all in 2021. We've run six now. We're about to run the seventh on various systems within the MOD, and it's been immensely successful. Overall, we found I think the current to date is 368 vulnerabilities, 124 which are rated critical and high. And within that, and obviously we can't go into details of what was found, but we found a number of critical vulnerabilities which were they exploited could have fundamentally compromised the systems involved. And as very high level example, the first bug bounty we did, there were two criticals that were discovered that if they were put together would have compromised the system. That was found in the first week. In the second bug bounty, the security boundaries that were put in place were compromised within the first day. So it's that kind of value that we're looking to bring in finding those kind of vulnerabilities, and that's what a bug bounty brings. Obviously, there's a lot more detail in there, but at a high level, that's what it is.
How does it feel when the hackers find things? Are you pleased, or does your heart sink a little bit?
Well, I would say we're really pleased. And really that comes down to it, kind of a change of mindset. So, you look traditionally, it's a back mark, like, oh my goodness, my system has a vulnerability, that looks bad. Well, actually, one of the things that we try and do is about changing a mindset and how we view systems, how we use vulnerabilities. So every system has vulnerabilities. You either know about them or you don't. And what we're trying to push is know about as many as you can, fix as many as you can, but at least know about them. It's better to see things and better to know than not to know what you've got. So it's all that kind of change of mindset. So I'd say, to answer your question, we're excited. We find a lot of vulnerabilities. And we patch, and we find that those vulnerabilities are patched, they're no longer available to our adversaries to misuse.
And there's something that you call the hacker mindset. What is that?
So it's really kind of creative, outside the box. So we work with people that are kind of top of their game. So they hack for a number of different companies. They're very experienced. They have lots of different skills, expertise. But the way they see things is very much outside of the box. And look at the systems and holistically in a different way than perhaps traditional security testing tool sets have done. And I'll give you a very sort of high level example. In a bug bounty, it wasn't one of ours, but generically a bug bounty systems, the hackers were given a range of IPs to go find systems, see where the vulnerabilities were, and the people that are setting the challenge were expecting them to look at a bunch of different servers and other things, seeing what they could find. But interestingly enough, in this particular example, what they found was an unsecured air conditioning system in the data center. You think, well, what can you do with that? Well, what you can do is things like you can set the temperature to 40, 50 degrees or whatever, and shut everything down if you wanted to. So it's that kind of out of the box thinking. That's just one example amongst many, but it's that kind of out of the box thinking that, we kind of encourage, to look for those kind of vulnerabilities that people aren't looking for, but our adversaries will. They use the same creative way of looking at things. So, that's I guess at a high level, the kind of hacker mindset that we encourage to our engagements.
So there must have been a bit of a cultural shift at the MAD to allow this kind of thing to go ahead. Has it taken a while?
I would say yes. Yes, it has, and it still is. I mean, the MOD is not one monolithic being. It is lots of different groups, lots of different areas. So one of the things that Richard and I do is present a lot to lots of different people and explain why we do what we do, what the advantages are. I would say it is an ongoing process to get things stood up. And initially, one of the issues that we had was because we were groundbreaking project is like, how does this work from a commercial perspective? How does this work from a legal perspective? So we had all those kind of hurdles to deal with as well. But the cultural thing is still there. There's a lot of different ways of looking at system security and that kind of, different way of looking at things. Some people get it more than others, so it is an ongoing challenge. I think we're in a much better position than we were maybe a couple of years ago, and we're much more established and people understand, you know, the benefits of what we're doing.
Richard, tell me a little bit about your hackers. Have you got some really top people involved in this, and do they come back time and time again?
Yeah, absolutely. So the supplier that we're actually using to deliver this is HackerOne, and they have 2.5 million ethical hackers on their platform. And when we run interventions at the Ministry of Defence, we have that pool of 2.5 million people to actually choose from. And we generally choose about 20 people for each engagement, and we're choosing people who are at the very top of their game. So as you can see from the pool that we're going in, we're really honing in on people who are highly skilled and very good at what they do, specifically for the assets that we have at the Ministry of Defence. But with that said, we do have a lot of people continuing to come back, actually making a lot of money from these interventions. And it's from a whole range of backgrounds. For example, one of the people who's actually been able to take home a lot of bounties in the past is someone who is a doctor in the Netherlands as their day job. So they actually just work with us in the evenings and on the weekends. One of the days, he actually, we engaged with these hackers on a platform called Slack, and he sent through a photo to say that after he's been finding bugs in the Ministry of Defence, it's now time for him to look for bugs in his patients, which we thought was quite amusing.
It's like a hobby for him, a bit of light relief after a day of being a doctor.
Yes, absolutely. That certainly seems to be the case. And he finds great vulnerabilities. So, you know, we'll take everyone. We've also had people who have backgrounds in firefighting. So there really is all sorts. As you would expect, a lot of people maybe have worked in cybersecurity, but, you know, not necessarily. So it's a real range of people that we work with. And what's interesting about that is that the vulnerabilities they find are often very different than you would find from other security testing methods, such as penetration testing, for example. So often assets have been through various forms of testing and they think that they won't find many vulnerabilities. But then when we actually turn the ethical hackers on them, they're looking for different things and that it turns up different results, which is really interesting.
You could say it's the power of diversity, right? We have the power of the crowd. We have lots of different perspectives from lots of different people within our challenges.
That's fascinating. So let's take this a little wider now. How does this kind of culture permeate across defence for people that work in defence, but they're not necessarily working in cyber?
I think a lot of that is around cultural change. Again, as I mentioned earlier, it's really, you know, realizing that every system has vulnerabilities, and it's better to know than not to know. So finding a vulnerability is a good thing, and, you know, it's something that, you know, we should all be looking for. It puts your system, you found vulnerabilities, is going to put you ahead of another system that doesn't know their vulnerabilities. So, you know, from a perspective of everybody that's engaged, you know, it's turning this from maybe a blame game into something for celebration. You know, you're willing to engage with it with an advanced security testing technique that finds all kinds of vulnerabilities. So, you know, engage with that. You know, don't point fingers, but but really sort of engage with it. That's sort of what I would say. Is, you know, it's really important, and for people to you know, to see and be involved with.
That does make sense. How would you describe best practice?
So from best practice, look at cybersecurity testing. This cybersecurity is a journey. It's not a destination. It's something that you're constantly doing. It's not like a tick box exercise, say, we are now secure, because it's not the case. It's something that is a constant journey. It's, you know, you're constantly looking to bring security. There'll be new vulnerabilities as systems get more complex, because, you know, look at IT systems in general. They're increasing in size and complexity and interaction, and so the opportunity for more vulnerabilities is always going to be there. So, you know, it's really moving from that perspective of seeing this is a tick box exercise, it's once and done, to it's an ongoing process. You know, more people you can get involved, the more perspectives you can get, the better, you know, that we'll all be, right?
So if people find a vulnerability, they're encouraged to come forward rather than somebody turning around saying, well, what were you doing there then?
Exactly. Yeah. If you find a vulnerability, there's internal ways of reporting it. You know, what we're focused on is more of an external way of reporting and getting involved in vulnerabilities. But yeah, you know, if you, it's like the whole see something, say something thing. If you see a vulnerability, you know, report it. Make sure that people are aware, even if it can't be fixed straight away. And sometimes there's very good reasons that things can't be fixed. If you know about them, a system owner can then mitigate against them.
Let's talk a little bit about your suppliers. Do they get involved in this sort of thing as well?
Our suppliers are involved, yes. So when we like to run the bug bounties, a lot of the systems that we are, if not most of the systems that we're targeting, are owned by a managed service provider. So firstly, we have to engage people internally within the Ministry of Defence, and they might identify an asset that's core for one of the frontline commands, whether that's the Army, the Navy or the Air Force. And then what we would generally have to do is then speak to that supplier who provides that asset. And we then need to get them on site to fully engage with us in the process, because our ideal situation is when we run a bug bounty, for example, the hackers are finding vulnerabilities in real time. And we, on the platform, we then want the hackers to engage with the suppliers to say, this is the vulnerability that I found. The supplier can then take that away for their development team, hopefully look to remediate it. And if they are able to remediate it during the challenge, we can then retest it. So the perfect scenario is running a bug bounty, finding a whole array of vulnerabilities and coming out of it, having remediated them all. In reality, that doesn't always happen, because certain things do take longer to remediate. But still, we are often in a situation where we actually do remediate many of those vulnerabilities, and we can only do that with our engagement with suppliers. That's the bug bounty. And one of the other areas that we're looking at, which Peter mentioned at the start, was the vulnerability disclosure program. So this is something whereby it just allows the general public, so we're not inviting hackers to these interventions, but it's ethical hackers within the public. So if there is a vulnerability, they can report it. So we actually have one for the Ministry of Defence, as Peter mentioned earlier. But one of the other areas that we're now looking at is setting up a vulnerability disclosure programme for the supply chain within the Ministry of Defence. So we're reaching out to suppliers to say, do you know what a vulnerability disclosure programme is? If they don't, we give them the background, saying, well, it's a tool that allows the public to report vulnerabilities. And then what we are now doing is actively enrolling suppliers onto this pilot and actually allowing them to find vulnerabilities which they wouldn't otherwise have known. So yeah, we have active engagement with suppliers all across the MOD.
Fantastic. So the next bug bounty is coming soon. Tell me a little bit more about that, and also the in-person bug bounty that's planned.
Yeah, so Bug Bounty 7 is our seventh bug bounty, as a name kind of implies. We have, and typically with any bug bounty, and obviously we're not going to talk about the details of that, but we typically have three or four different systems and assets involved, enough to give hackers a good scope, a good level of interest in what we're providing. And that's due to start mid-February, run basically 4 weeks. So I should say one of the things that we do that's maybe different from traditional security testing is we run our bug bounties over a longer period, and that gives hackers time to fully understand the system that they're looking at and develop ways of identifying vulnerabilities that you're not necessarily going to find within a shorter time span. So we do encourage that sort of full engagement over a period. So that our next one's due, again, mid-February, running for basically a month. The in-person is a little bit different. So typically what we're focusing on is internet accessible assets, and that includes a lot. I mean, there's a lot out there available. One thing that we can't necessarily do is touch assets that are not internet accessible. So we are working on, I guess, a variant of the bug bounty where we target systems that are within ModNet or not typically internet accessible, and we will bring on fly hackers in to focus on those particular systems. So we're, that's something that's, I guess, pilot for us this year. It's in flight right now, and will, give us reach into an areas that we haven't been able to for the first couple of years. Our enemies, our adversaries are already hacking us, so why wouldn't we let our friends do so as well?
We are actively looking for assets to take part in our intervention. So whether that's a remote bug bounty, whether that's an in-person bug bounty, we have a team set up, suppliers on board to deliver this work. And the one thing we're always looking for is more assets. So if there is anyone listening to this podcast who thinks that their asset would benefit from security testing, do reach out to our team because we could certainly help.
That was Richard Smith and Peter Lillington from the MOD's Vulnerability Research Project. Look out for more episodes in this series. You can find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find out more by emailing the team at cyberconfident@mod.gov.uk.